Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast, our first episode of 2025, first episode in, I don't know, like 3 weeks, something like that. I am finally over my little festive break, and I'm ready again to talk about the A-League for what we're hoping is going to be around an hour. We are like a New Year's resolution for the pod, cut down from an hour and a half to around an hour. So, let's see if we can do it today. I'm actually joined today by two guests, and we're reestablishing the panel that we had for the first pod of the season, which is Cody Ajayda and Caden Foley. Cody, I'll start with you. You're sporting the... Is that a Napoli top today?
It is, Christian. I got it while I was in Sorrento in the middle of last year. Great to be back. I'm feeling good. I've had a good Christmas. And look, it's a nice throwback to round one. Me, you, Caden. Hopefully, everyone is on the same page with the brief this time.
Yep. We're hoping that's the case. Caden, like Cody said there, hopefully you're on the same page with the brief today.
Me and Caden weren't the issue last time, Christian. Let me just look.
I will not tolerate this slander. A minute and a half into the first podcast of the year. All right. Let me get back on my feet. All right. Come on. Fire out. But Caden, how are we?
I'm good. I've been studying the brief all day, last 3 hours straight. I think I've got a down pat, so looking forward to getting back into the podcast.
Just reading all 4 points over and over again.
Exactly. Got to lock it in.
Revision. Like, if I ask Caden questions right now about the brief, he'd be able to, you know, just memorize it off by heart.
Sound like my Year 12 teacher talking about the syllabus.
And I think we're going to retire the Fahid Ben Kalfala, Caden's agent jokes, because it seems like that whole situation is kind of is the old news of the day. Cody doesn't know what we're talking about because he wasn't on the pods when we did that. All right, let's move on. So what the other thing with the pod this year, we're going to kind of change things up a little bit. So we've got a few four talking points that we're going to kind of discuss in a bit of detail tonight on the pod, and then we'll just kind of mention some things briefly at the end from kind of the weekend and the results, of course, talking everything A-League men as always. So we're going to start. I'll be honest, I've tried my best. I feel like there's way too much negativity in general when we talk about anything Australian football related. So I've tried my best when we talk about these things to kind of mix in some positive stories with the negative. And to be honest, with the A-League at the moment, there is a good balance. So we're going to start, though, with a negative, because the Brisbane Roar are now, I'm pretty sure historically, this is now the worst ever season at the moment, because they've now passed the New Zealand Knights from the first season of the A-League, who I think they got 3 points from their first 12, and I think Brisbane have got two. So Ruben Zakovic's Brisbane Roar, it's not going well. That's a nice way of putting it. They lost to Melbourne City 1-0 yesterday, recording this on a Sunday night. And it seems every Brisbane fan and their dog is calling for Ruben's head. There are others that I think rightfully are kind of saying that this is also a broader issue, not just around Ruben Zakovic. But Cody, I'll start with you because you're pretty keen to talk about this. I guess for me, Ruben Zakovic definitely needs to harbour some blame here for Brisbane performances. That's absolutely clear. There is no way any team in this competition, in a salary cap competition, should not have a win after 12 games. And also now be 6 points off the pace, off second bottom, now with Perth winning against Auckland as well. So let's make no mistake here. Ruben Zakovic is not doing a good job at the Brisbane Roar. But I also think, which I've kind of been arguing online with a few people, like I just don't see it with this squad. I think it's an awfully built squad. I don't understand what their recruitment strategy was in the offseason. And I think Brisbane have a couple of other issues, like, for example, not really having a proper academy, which is hurting them in a time where a lot of A-League clubs are relying on their academy players. So, Cody, take us away. What's your sort of read on this whole situation?
I can sum it up very quickly, and that's just this Brisbane side kind of sucks at the moment. To put it not very lightly, it's a bit of a terrible, terrible setup. I think their only saving grace, if you look back at the last few weeks, they haven't lost games by a lot. But I'm sure anyone that's watched those games know that they've been, how do I put it? Uninspiring might be the right word. There's nothing from those games that I look at and go, oh, they probably should have gotten something out of it. There's a couple of games in there that look, the game against Perth, Cameron Cook had a good game. Perth managed to nab a win. Newcastle Jets, Ryan Scott, able to pull out a few decent saves as well. But overall, I can't see what direction this side's going in, and I can't look at how this side is at the moment with the players they have at their disposal and go, okay, yeah, there's something that can turn it around. And frankly, the way that Zadkovic hasn't set up as well, I don't see a way forward for Brisbane in the current setup that they have. We've spoken a few times about overarching arguments, whether it's the fact that they had, you mentioned before, the academy, that I know the offseason or started last year or something, like whenever it was, abolished their academy before the under-23s age group from memory. And I guess you've spoken about the owner side of things, whether they are taking everything seriously. And look, I think the biggest argument to that is, and I know some people have mentioned with the women's side that maybe the higher-ups don't really care about the Brisbane Roar women's side, but they're doing something very right in that situation. So if things are able to go so very well with one team, why can't they go so very well with the other? That's my biggest question. And so you've got to put a bigger lens on the setup that they actually have within the first team squad. And I don't think that setup is in any way, shape or form good at the moment. And I'm not worried about retribution for saying this, because I think a lot of Brisbane Roar fans are going to agree with me. I'm not one to usually read on the socials and take what fans say as gospel, but I think one thing that's very clear is Brisbane Roar fans aren't happy, and I'll say this in the nicest way possible. They think they deserve better, and frankly, I think they do. And it's, you look at where Brisbane once were as a football club, as I think it was the Suited and Booted podcast. No, it was Bess Aparicio said it on the Football Tonight show.
Football Tonight, yeah.
And that, Brisbane used to be a club that was feared by teams. You know, you go to Suncorp, you've got however many people, 15 to 20,000 people that can get in there on a normal game, and they made it a fortress, and they made it as uncomfortable for teams as possible because they're relentlessly pressing, they're attacking, they're playing on the front foot. And you look at this side now, and I know I'm going to back a few weeks saying this, but you look at the display they put up with the Wanderers, Zadkovic at 2-all, telling his players to go down with a hammy very clearly on camera. It's not a good look for Brisbane. Everything around this side, there's no goodwill with it. And honestly, if there's a side that's going to come last this year, they're probably the ones that do deserve it.
Yeah, look, I'm feeling great about predicting them to finish last.
Feeling fantastic about that.
Yeah, no disrespect to Raw fans. Caden, you seem to be much more, we're talking off air, you seem to be much more on the side of, you know, Ruben's got to go, and what on earth is Ruben doing?
Well, yes and no. I think when you lose this many games and play without getting a result, you've got to make some changes. And he's benefiting from the fact that this is like a closed league with no relegation. So honestly, there's no real pressure on him to make the changes needed. But I think the biggest issue with Brisbane is the whole ownership situation with the Bakris. I don't know. We're not really sure how invested both financially and mentally they are in the club. And I think some real changes need to happen from the very top if Brisbane are going to want to get back to the Raw Salona days that we all know and love.
Yeah, so on the kind of point of ownership and I guess investment, and I mentioned at the start about the squad and the state of the squad. So I'm gonna go through these are the signings that Brisbane made in the offseason, and I want you guys to you know what, you can stop me when there's a player on this list that has actually played well so far this season. So Harry van der Sar, who actually isn't there right now, he's left on compassionate grounds now. Ben Wallens, now, in fairness, did his ACL a few weeks back, so that's a tough one to judge. I don't think he was really playing well before that. Ben Halloran, Marcus Fakranis, hasn't played. Hossein Bilodi, Waleed Shaw, Adam Zimmerino, Rafael Struijk, Nisa Acosta, Pearson Casawaya, to be fair, played his first game yesterday against Melbourne City. Jacob Brissett, okay. I think that's probably one that's been good. He's been positive. And then, well, the only one listed here, obviously Henry Hoare, they're going to get back probably for the next game coming back from loan. But, and I guess Lucas Harrington, for me, has been good. They've promoted. He's from the youth squad on a scholarship contract. So the point is that recruitment's been shocking. And I think there's some Raw fans out there who are blaming that on Ruben Zakovic, as if to say he wanted those players. He led the recruitment. Look, I don't really know how anyone can say that without knowing kind of the inner workings of how they go about it. But the fact is that a lot of these signings for me, like, so the Van der Sar, Warland, Halloran signings in particular are just kind of, and even Zimmerino, it's kind of like, how do you say, like, almost like loose change kind of signings. Like, hey, Adelaide didn't want those three players, for example. So here you go, Brisbane. You can just take them off our hands. You'll find a spot for them, which I think if you're ever doing that as an A-League club, like, okay, you're not really going to get anywhere long-term, in my opinion. And then, you know, like, Struijk and Waleed Shaw, like, you know, Struijk has not been good at all, for example. I don't know. Honestly, I don't really know. Maybe it's just for Indonesia because they don't have other options and he's just kind of able to shine for them a little bit, but he hasn't been great. And yeah, like, you know, like someone like Adam Zimmerino, like, you know, with all due respect, there's kind of a reason why Perth were happy to see the end of him, clearly. Like, he's been awful. So on top of that, Kai Truan leaving, massive loss. Tom Aldred kind of looking like a massive loss at the moment, right? Losing that experience. Like, so, you know, they've just... I think looking at this just as a Zakovic, and just quickly on that, I can't recognize what they're trying to do in most games. Like, I don't really know what system they're playing sometimes. Like, it's kind of difficult. Just seems like kind of their attackers in particular are just kind of moving into different spaces without any real purpose. They keep the ball without any genuine purpose either. And it's just very, very boring, to be honest, to watch as well. And the last thing I'll say on this is, like, yesterday's game against Melbourne City, Caden, you were there. Melbourne City were tired. Were you there, Caden?
No, I wasn't there.
No, you weren't there. No, you were there on Friday for the Victory Western game, which we'll probably talk about in a minute. But Melbourne City, to me, looked gassed. Like, they looked like they had clearly... There were minutes in the legs of some of those guys. They're obviously going through a major injury crisis at the moment as well. And Brisbane didn't even lay a hand on them. Like, that's what it felt like. It wasn't until, I think, there was a late chance for Casawaya at the end. He could have equalized, but, you know, it was just incredibly passive. And Melbourne City didn't really get out of second gear for me. And that's just super concerning. It just feels like Brisbane's performances are actually getting worse. Even in the first kind of 5-6 games, you could say, yeah, maybe they deserved a couple of wins, but now they're just kind of going nowhere. So, Cody, I think were you gonna say something before?
Yeah. Look, well, my original thoughts kind of slipped my mind, but you read out
ownership. I think Caden mentioned about ownership.
Yeah. Look, another point's kind of come into my head though, because what you were talking about with the players they brought in. How many? I don't know if you're gonna know an exact figure off your head. How many names did you rattle off there?
Well, let's have a look here.
I can't remember what it was exactly, but you're talking maybe 8, 9 plus.
That's 11, I think.
11 names. So you're talking
almost
the amount of a full squad that they've brought in over the offseason. I'm going to make this a very simple comparison because there's two sides that have probably been standouts in terms of being noticeably poor this season. That's Brisbane Roar and Perth Glory. What did Perth Glory do the moment things started going well? Because there was a stage where Perth Glory looked like they were going to be the whipping boys this season. And not Brisbane Roar. It wasn't probably until they kind of played their, as people would call it, the mid-off, before that narrative kind of changed a little bit. But Perth went through a rut where they were disastrously horrible. It was almost borderline disgusting. But what do they do? Everyone pointed to Lazaridis. They said the recruitment was terrible. They were looking at David's Village saying, you know, there's no identity. There's nothing that's going on, which I think took a lot of people by surprise, including myself, because David's Village has worked with some very distinct coaches in the past and has some very distinct tasks at Sydney FC that suggested that he'd be able to bring in and implement his own style of play, even if it wasn't able to be straight away. But what did they do the moment things started going bad? They realized internally that, okay, maybe the problem isn't necessarily with the coach, it's with the playing squad. They've gotten rid of a few players already, just basically went, no, this isn't working, you're going. I think three of their visa players they've already basically pissed off. They recognized that there was a problem. They acted straight away, and they actually did it intelligently well. I've got a lot of respect for Lazaridis with the fact that they didn't just look at that situation and go, we're going to take the easy way out. We're going to sack David Zrilic, and we're going to just put an interim, let them stay out the season with their squad, and then they can start fresh straight away. They've gone to players. They've cancelled contracts. They've gone, no, this is where the issue is. The issue is with the playing group, so we're going to make the change that we needed. And I'm looking at some of the players, at least the rumours that they've got coming in for the next window. And it's actually a little bit exciting. Like, I actually think they can turn their season around. They're probably out of the finals race. I mean, you'll probably be honest about that.
Yeah, I'd be shocked. Yeah,
but they're setting up a platform where they can actually be successful long term, which I think this season was always going to be about as well. You have a change of ownership. You've got a new director of football or whatever the fancy title that Stan Lazaridis has. You've got a new coach who, you know, for all his credentials, is in his first season in the hot seat. There was always going to be teething issues. But you can see there's a system in the club where there is actually a little bit of intelligence about them, where they can recognise where a problem actually lies. Because a lot of clubs probably would have just sacked a coach. My biggest problem with Brisbane Roar is there's two clear problems. One, the recruitment strategy was terrible. You rattled off a whole lot of names. And the only common thing that I can see is that they had a few senior players that were available. I think that's the only common thing that all those players have, is that they were just available at the time. You put them all together. There's no clear system that you go. It's like, okay, yeah, you put these players together and you mix them with who they've got now, and they're going to be able to do this, this, that, and this. It's not there. They just bought in senior players. It's like, okay, this guy's available. Let's get him quickly. That's all they've done. No strategy, nothing whatsoever. They've gone 12 games into the season. They haven't won. And the two draws they've had, look, the MacArthur game was topsy-turvy, but Wanderers, frankly, that's probably been their most disappointing performance, just simply because of everything that happened towards the end of the match. Borderline disgusting. I've used that word before. I'm going to use it again. But you're 12 games into a season, you've got 2 points, and you're sitting back and you're doing nothing. And like I said, there's two clear problems. You've got the recruitment problem, which I just went through. You've also got the problem with the way they're playing. There's no identity, there's no structure, and there's nothing to say that they actually know what they're doing. Whether it be Zajkovic knows what he's doing in terms of implementing a style, or the players being receptive to what he's saying. And you've got people at the top of the club that are sitting there and not doing anything about either. That, I think, is probably the worst thing about this situation. I think that's where a lot of Brisbane Roar fans are getting annoyed. I know I said before it's probably a cop-out when you just go and sack the coach, but I think there's a reasonable ground to say that Zajkovic's job should actually be under fire. I know you said the whole recruitment strategy shouldn't be pinned on him, but you can look at it two ways. Either they're the players that he's brought in, he's done a terrible job at it, and he should face consequences for it. Or, and frankly, he's in the media saying, we need 3 windows to rebuild. You've brought in 11 players, mate. You've brought in a full squad. You should have enough there to work with. Or there's people above you making the decision. You're the front man. And after 12 games where you've got 2 points, you're happy to accept it. And frankly, if you're in a position like that, you're just as much to blame. So I don't know if there's an issue higher up in the club. For all I know, there could be. But Zajkovic does need to take a lot of blame for this. And the whole thing of, oh, we don't have the depth. Oh, we need more windows. Oh, we need more time. It's cop-outs. It's excuses. He's just trying to buy himself more time. And frankly, the standards that Brisbane Roar set in the past, I remember the season after they won the grand final in 2014, they sacked Mike Mulvey after 5 games and they weren't anywhere near as bad as this. So the fact that they're letting Zajkovic sit in the job, I don't know what's changed in the back of the club from then to now. You're talking maybe 10, 11, 12 year difference. I don't know. I can't be bothered doing the math. It's too late in the evening, but something's changed and it's to the detriment of their club. And it's actually sad that they've let standards slip to the point where you're there being they you're talking about a Brisbane Roar side 10 years ago that's been compared to some of the best Australian club sides that have ever existed. And now we're comparing them to New Zealand fucking Knights. That says enough, I think.
Yep. So we got to move along. I'll just add this. So I think one of the real issues here as well is that Ruben Zakovic is he's lost control of the narrative around the situation too. So you're talking there about the cop outs and stuff. Like, it's spot on, because like, look at Western United. We're about to talk about Western United. Like, a club as well. So Academy's only been running for, you know, basically since they started. So only like, you know, probably a few years. So still a very new Academy setup, but trusting that setup. John Aloisi's been very clear around, this is what we're doing. It's very clear to a Western United supporter, that's the direction of the club. Ruben Zakovic constantly talks about, this is a rebuild, we need windows. But if I'm a Brisbane fan, I don't understand. I've said this before. What does this rebuild entail? What are the stages of this so-called rebuild? How is this going to look? Where does the team need to be in 12 months for this rebuild to be on track? And it's just, you're right, Cody, because at the moment, and maybe they do have actually a plan and we just don't know about it, but at the moment, it's just coming across as just buzzwords that are just being thrown out there as if to, you know, hey, just go easy on us because, you know, it's a rebuild. And also, I think Ruben Zakovic, well, I will defend him a little bit, is he's also having to answer these sorts of questions in presses, because people like Kasper Tafta and Zach Anderson, who Kasper Tafta used to do these CEO updates every week on the Brisbane Roar website he stopped doing it about 8 months ago. I'm not too sure why. And now when the going is getting tough, I haven't heard a word from either of them. And that's just not good enough. Because if you're gonna preach transparency, if you're gonna preach honesty and openness with supporters, you're gonna have to do it when the going gets tough, because you've lost control of the narrative now. And
I just want to interject with one very, very quick point. The fact that they're talking about a rebuild is that's another massive cop out as well, because the reality is 12 months ago they were in a half decent position as a club. Good young players coming through, a coach that knew what he's doing, they had a set plan, they looked good, they were playing exciting football. 12 months later, things have gone downhill. And the reality is, who's been at the helm for that period?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of inner sort of details behind the Ross Aloisi and what happened there, which we're not going to kind of go into
aside, the point is they hired a coach. They have been poorer since, and he's still in a job. Yeah. I'll end it there, because I don't want to say anything that's going to get me in trouble.
No, that's fine. Caden, if you just want to just put a bow on this, anything to add?
Look, I will say they've got good young players in their squad, so there is a half a foundation there that I think Brisbane Roar fans shouldn't totally give up hope about. They've got players like Lucas Harrington, Brissett, Quinn McNichol, Keegan Jelicic. These are all good young players, so if they can sort out this kind of behind-the-scenes stuff, they're not too far off. And with regarding Ruben Zakovic saying, oh, he needs three windows to kind of rebuild this team, that's not really a viable option in the A-League. This isn't where you got a Premier League where you have long amounts of time to rebuild. You get maximum maybe two windows, and if you can't succeed with that time, you're gone. That's just how it works in a salary cap league.
But also, we're in a salary cap league. Everyone's paying the same amount of money. You've got players that are on short-term contracts. It doesn't take that long to rebuild a side. You could rebuild it in one off-season.
Well, not every club's paying the same amount of money, but everyone...
I know, but they're also playing in... They've got a setup where most players are on 1 or 2 year contracts, so come season's end, you're able to get rid of half your squad anyway.
Yeah. Brisbane's next five, Sydney away, Wanderers at home, Wellington away, Jets away, Victory at home. So, I don't know. It's not too bad, I guess. Like, there is a possibility.
Probably for
a
couple, Brisbane.
But this is Brisbane, so I don't really know. Like, you know, you look at it as, oh, Wellington away, like, that's maybe a winnable game, but Wellington would look at that and think, we're at home, that's a big winnable game for us. I don't know. Let's see how they track. All right, let's talk about a much more positive team. Probably the most watchable team in the A-League right now, doing a lot of things right, and I think we need to spend about 10 or so minutes praising them, and that is Western United, who once again pulled a rabbit out of the hat on Friday night. Caden, you were there for this game. Injury time, once again, injury time comeback kings. They did it in Perth. They did it against Melbourne Victory. Two goals for Hiroshi Ibusuki. They are now, where are they on the table? What, they would be third?
Fifth.
But they were, I think, third at one point during the weekend. It's extremely tight. They are 3 points off top, though, right now. A team who we all thought were going to, you know, be probably not really a team of interest after their last couple of seasons, but these young players that they've got have been given an opportunity. They've put faith in them, and they're really rewarding that faith in big ways, Caden, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. It's just got to commend Johnny A. He's done such a good job with this team, and he's been
Johnny A. What are you close mates with him?
Yeah, I'm best mates with him. Yeah, he's done really well with this team over the last few years. He's been under heaps of pressure, but he's just committed to this slow, kind of piece by piece rebuild over the last, I'd say, two seasons. And we're now starting to see the rewards from that. We've got so many great young players coming through this team. You know, Bottic, I reckon, could be a future Socceroo. Reece Bozanowski stepped up with Seb Pasquale being injured in midfield. Abel Wallaty, he's such an exciting prospect. And then young Luke Vickery, 19 years old, it was his first start on Friday night, and he got an assist to his name. So, yeah, there's so much to look forward to with Western United. I know, speaking as people behind the scenes, they're very confident about the future of the club. They've got the main issues, of course, the not being able to play at Ironbark Fields for their home games against other Melbourne-based teams. But I can say that that's being worked on, and they're hoping potentially next season that could be fixed, and they'll be able to play all their games at Ironbark Fields, which will just be an even bigger added boost to the morale of the club.
Absolutely. And you talk about kind of, you know, John Aloisi's basically rebuilt this team a little bit. So he deserves massive amounts of credit. I think also, though, that we were just talking about, you know, Brisbane's upper management and how their negligence essentially is leading to their situation. Actually, Western United's patience is kind of led to this turn of fortunes a little bit too, because I feel like if we went back 18 months ago, if you asked even some Western United supporters, they would have been like, listen, I'm not too sure where this is going. Maybe Aloisi kind of, he got the championship back in 22. But, you know, they had that great season, played a very different sort of style to what they're doing right now. The foreigners really clicked for them. All that sort of stuff happened. And you felt like, oh, okay, like maybe that was the high point and maybe they need to move and do something different. But I think what they've done is, I remember it was Unite round last year, and they had played MacArthur, I believe. I think it was a draw or something, 3-3.
Yeah, 3-3, crazy game.
Yeah, and I remember afterwards, John Aloisi was asked about, this was in January, so he was asked about new signings and stuff, and he kind of said really openly, yeah, we don't have the funds available to sign players. So first of all, nice and transparent there, but also with that and also a commitment to giving young players an opportunity, you can see that they've identified as a club a while ago that if we want to be sustainable as a club, like, we're going to have to play our young players, essentially sell them for fees and survive that way. But also, look at our academy. We've got a lot of good, talented players. I mean, let's just look on the weekend. Wallaty, top prospect. Luke Vickery, was awesome off the bench against Perth, and then just backed it up again with the start against Victory. He's a fantastic, really direct winger from early signs. We know Botic's quality. Bozanowski's really stepped in brilliantly, like you said, Caden. Dylan Leonard, I don't know, if the season stopped today, like, you could make a case that he's been one of the best centre-backs in the league. He's been that good for a 17-year-old. Grimaldi has had a bit of a different season, a little bit more of a reduced role, but he still had his moments. Then Jordan Lawton pops up, scores an insane bicycle kick. I mean, you just go on, and it kind of almost feels like this academy is like, you know, it's like when we talk about Adelaide United, or, you know, when we're talking about the Mariners a couple of years ago, and we're going, oh, another one. And Western United have actually got that. And I don't know if people are kind of just hesitant to give them praise because of, you know, the usual negative sort of vibe that surrounds Western United, because people think, you know, they shouldn't have got the license to begin with and all that crap. To be honest with you, I don't really give a fuck about that conversation anymore. Like, they're here now, and it's not going to change. And what they're doing is they're making themselves self-sufficient a bit more. And they're probably going to make a lot of money off of some transfer fees at the end of the season, the way things are going. But they're getting results with it, and they've complemented these young guys with signings like Ibasuki. Great signing, perfect for them. Imai's kind of refound his form a little bit. I think Tay Russell's been a decent signing just to fill a gap. Thurgate's come along eventually. So, yeah, they're doing a lot of things right. Cody, what's your sort of main takeaway when you look at Western United at the moment and how they're going?
I just want to track back to your point that you said about the license, actually. You kind of almost got to pick your poison with stuff in this country when it comes to football, because I don't know, I know it wasn't necessarily, this wasn't probably the reason why people were against it, but I know the reason why people weren't too happy with the license was they didn't want a 13 Melbourne, they didn't want a Western Melbourne team, they didn't think it was a viable market for football, but, well, for a football club. And look, their attendance, especially in the early days, maybe there is an argument for it. No, they're not the most well-supported league. You look at maybe a Wollongong or a Canberra, you get, what, maybe an extra 5,000-10,000 fans through the gate per week, or however much you want. Either way, they probably have a bigger fan base. But where I say you got to pick your poison, you could have given a license to Canberra, Wollongong, or anything like that. We don't know who was in charge of those bids. We don't know who was going to be the owners. For all we know, it could have been, and this is worst case scenario, of course, it could be a Clive Palmer situation. Gold Coast isn't a bad market. You probably get decent crowds if it's a functioning club running well. But you gave the license to, I don't want to use the words that I'd use to describe Clive Palmer on record. Let's just put it that way. What they've done with Western United, look, they probably haven't given it to the most well-supported club in the end, but they've given the license to people that clearly understand what it takes to run a football club and a viable football club and a half-decent performing football club in Australia.
Well, they're, like, if you take the stadium stuff and all this sort of stuff aside, like, Western United's football operations over the, what, 5 years or so they've been...
It hasn't been bad. Like, the signings generally are decent. They've very rarely gotten visa signings wrong. Mm. Look at their... They brought Diamante to the league, for fuck's sake. Like, that's had Pena for a bit.
Like, yeah.
And yeah, well, look, Pena was already known. Well,
yeah, I know. I'm just saying they were able to secure his services. Yeah,
they had someone like that. They had Prijovic, Lacroix, his first season is actually still one that stands out in my mind. It was absolutely fantastic. You've got a decent operation there. So I think it's probably something that I guess fans should probably ask themselves internally. Do you want... I know people probably want the clubs that make the league look good outwards, but do you take that for shitty owners, or would you rather people here that can actually contribute something positive to Australian football? I'm not saying I know the right answer. I'm not saying this is necessarily the right answer. It's a debatable opinion, but I'd be interested to see what people think, because the way you describe that and the football operation, the football side of things, the reality is when the license was handed out, it probably was a good decision putting it in the hands of the people that it's in right now. You put the culture side of things aside, it actually looks like a decent choice. But get back to the football and this season. I'll be honest, I did not think much of West United going into the season.
I had them 11th. Like, yeah, I know, yeah.
I had them very close to that, if not lower. Not as low as Brisbane, and that part's looking good at least. But I think one thing that, and look, Christian, you're not from Victoria. I'm not from Victoria, Caden. You are from Victoria, so you might have thought a little bit differently to us in this regard. I don't know who's coming through at Western United until they're actually in the first team. I don't follow the second division of Victorian state football all that closely. Shoot me, unfortunately, I don't have the time to follow every single state league in Australia in that much depth. I'd rather focus on the stuff that's going on in New South Wales. But, you know, people's perceptions are probably warped by how they think a team's going to go in a certain season because they don't necessarily see what's coming underneath the side. You know, Wallace was someone that was probably a little bit known from last season, had a little bit of a breakout, showed a few good signs, someone that you could kind of pick to go, okay, yeah, this season he can come in and do a job. But I didn't know who Luke Vickery was. I didn't know who Dylan Leonard was. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who Jordan Lawton was. And I wish I knew who he was because he's a freaking baller, absolutely fantastic player. But we don't know who these guys are. The fact that Western United, they've got, it's not just about, oh yeah, we're going to bring these guys in, make sure we can get a sell-on fee for them. Any club can do that. Any club can go play young players and go, yep, see, we're doing something. We're going to build these guys in. They're going to play some games and then we're going to sell them for money. Look at what Brisbane Roar's doing. They've got young players all through their squad, but there's not really much going on there still. But Western United, you've got, they've clearly prepared these young players to go, okay, you're going to come into this first team. You're going to do this, this, that, and this. You're going to make a name for yourself, and then we're going to make some money off you. There's that contingency plan where there's clearly a good setup in the academy because they've prepared them for senior football properly. You know, the only other club at the moment that's doing it at a standout level is probably Melbourne City because you look at the side they've got, especially with all their injury troubles. I know that's probably half the reason why some of these kids are getting the go that they are. But you've got 17, 18, 19-year-olds who this is their first season of professional football, and they're leading a club that is used to success with a flashy squad to the top of the table. That is a big achievement. But Western United, maybe not the same scale as what Melbourne City, of course, but they're still doing it very, very well. I don't know if this is a season that they're going to get the return on. I actually wouldn't mind seeing some of these players stay for another one or two more seasons because you hold them on for that little bit extra. You probably look a little bit further down the line, they probably get one, even more money for them. But two, this side could actually be a successful squad. You give Luke Vickery time to develop. You give especially someone like Abel Wallace that time to develop, a local kid from the Western Melbourne area as well. You could probably actually build a championship winning squad or very close to it out of this.
Well, that's what I actually wrote down here. Like, you're talking about maybe next season or something. I mean, this league is wide open right now. And Western United have, let's have a look here just quickly. They have now, yeah, they've won five of their last six.
On the form table, they're actually coming first.
Yeah, and you watch them play. They create heaps of chances. They're very comfortable with the system that they play. I think defensively, they've been great. But, you know, like, yeah, they've got a 17-year-old anchoring their defense a little bit too. Like, they're going to have some moments. They got someone like Matt Sutton, who's been great, but is also in his first season playing consistent football. I mean, Caden, point here is I think they're definitely in the finals conversation. That's without question. But I think in the A-League, like, these windows, they kind of open and they shut. Like, look at Wellington, right? Last year, that was their moment. Like, that was the opportunity to actually, if you were going to bring a championship back to Wellington, that was it. I'm not saying they can't get back there, but under this sort of period, it seems like that's the case. We're actually going to talk about them in a moment. But Western United, they've been there before. They've won a championship, of course, you know, let's not forget. But by no means, if they just keep riding this wave of momentum, and particularly with how inconsistent everyone just kind of seems to be a little bit at the moment, I mean, Caden, what's the ceiling here? Like, there's no reason why they can't be a very competitive finals team.
I absolutely agree. I think they should be aiming for at least a semi-final berth, like Wellington did last season. I think their squad's just as good as last year's Wellington one, and yeah, I think they should totally be aiming for that. I think that's definitely their ceiling. And then depending on the draw, they can maybe sneak into a grand final appearance. But that's all remains on players staying fit and staying in good form. So anything can happen in the crazy A-League. So we've got to be ready to see what happens.
Definitely. The thing is, when you talk about that happening this season, you're relying on a few different factors. You're relying on no one else having the same patch of form that Western United could potentially have. You're relying on the league staying as chaotic as it is at the moment, which, look, in years gone by, that's actually not a bad shout. It probably could. And you're looking at it as, okay, yeah, they're in the mix now. They're doing really, really well. But they get a few runs, they get a few wins, they could take themselves even further. But the adverse option of that is they could get a few losses and actually sink down to eighth, ninth, 10th the way the league's going at the moment as well. It's both options are probably just as viable, and you can't necessarily trust it with a young team where a lot of them are still in their first season. I'm not saying that it can't happen. It definitely can. I don't know if it's something that I'd talk about yet. You said they're in the finals conversation. I think they're definitely in the finals conversation. I think if they start thinking about, oh, okay, like the league's wide open, we could actually go for the title. If they start thinking with that mentality, that could probably have, I'd probably say, a worse effect on them than probably the opposite. I think that'd actually be to their detriment. If I'm in Aloisi's position, I'm taking things one at a time. I'm just focusing on trying to secure a final spot. If something opens up in the last maybe 5-7 games where it's like, oh shit, yeah, we're in for the title possibly, then you start thinking about it. But right now, I think it's a bit too early.
Yeah, I just mean, like, I think the top eight right now in the A-League is probably going to stay the same. I just don't see it with the Mariners and Wellington at the moment. I think, like, you look at Newcastle today, their loss and just, like, their lack of consistency, and I think Perth and Brisbane. I mean, look, maybe Perth can have an incredible second half of the season. I don't think
a late Wanderers charge is out of the question either. I wouldn't be
surprised. No. I'm saying, basically, I'm ruling out everyone below the Wanderers. So,
oh, fair enough. There's a bit of a gap between Wanderers and Victory at the moment.
Yeah, no. So I think, well, the Wanderers have only played 11 games, and I actually think they've been pretty decent in most of their games. But, yeah, I just think in that sort of pack of eight teams, West United are well and truly in that. So
I think the ones in that pack of eight that are going to do really well are going to be the ones that just simply focus on what they can control. They go out games, they win games, they don't start thinking about the bigger picture. They just focus on what's in their immediate path. And I think that's what West United really need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, look, Melbourne Victory still haven't won a game under Arthur Diles. The Wanderers are conceding a lot of goals, even though they are scoring. Like, I can go through with any of these teams and make different cases as to why they're going to drop off. And West United, I guess, maybe their young players have been super consistent to start the season. Maybe we're going to see some inconsistency in the second half of the season. Let's wait and see. They've got, who have they got next? They have got the Jets at home, a very winnable game. Then the Mariners at home, another winnable game. Then they've actually got three very big games, MacArthur away, and then Auckland and Adelaide United at home. So February actually seems like a bit of a kind of how serious are they sort of month for Western United. So let's see what happens come March, I guess. All right, let's get to a conversation I'm not sure I'm prepared to have, but Wellington, Chiefy, it's turgid, man. It's turgid. It's not good. Wellington look awful. They've had, you know, they've got a lot of injuries. Let's make no mistake. As I'm already making excuses for my guy, but I think there's been a clear drop off from last season. They're definitely not the same team. There's a lot of reasons for that. They've lost players in the off season, of course, but just their whole approach at the moment. I don't know what's kind of going on, whether the players aren't executing maybe what Giancarlo Italiano wants, or whether the approach that they're going with and the style, maybe they're trying to replicate what they did last year with a different group of players, and it's just not viable. But it's Wellington of now, as I think I'm just going to remind myself of this now. Yeah, they've won only one of their last... they've lost five of their last six. Yeah. So they really are on a slide. For me, like, they're a couple of games away, maybe a month away of bad results from just, like, the season being a write-off. And Alex Roof has now got... what do you say? Glandular fever? Is that you say? Yeah, glandular fever. He's out indefinitely. Marco Rojas is going to be out still for a while. He was a player that they brought in to be really focal this season, and yeah, it's not looking good. Caden, where are you at with Wellington? Because I thought on Saturday against Adelaide United they were pretty poor in the first half. They had a better second half, but ultimately I think they created something like less than one XG again. They only had a handful of shots on goal. Like, it's just not, doesn't seem to be a style at the moment that's viable long term.
Yeah, I agree. I think the style that Chiefy wants to play, he just simply doesn't really have the players for it right now. He's obviously committed to playing, but kind of absorbing pressure and hitting on the counter attack and building up slowly from the back in possession. But they just don't have the quality, I think, right now. I think starting even from the goalkeeper, the Josh Olowoniyemi, I'm not totally convinced by him yet. I think he's obviously a downgrade on Paulsen because everyone would be a downgrade on Paulsen, but yeah, I think he's been struggling. I think losing Ben Old from last season, it was a massive loss for him. I think he was so crucial to how Chiefy played. Same with Bozidar Krajev and Oscar Zavada. So I think this year could be just a bit of a second season kind of struggle for Chiefy, but I think if he can get all his players healthy and maybe next season focus on recruiting again to players that better suit his style, I think he still is a quality coach in this league and has a lot to offer.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the players they lost, and I mentioned that before. I mean, you're right. Like with Oluwayemi, I think, there's probably a lot of Phoenix fans who are thinking, who's this guy? Like, he's just not being good. But, anyone is going to be a downgrade from Alex Paulsen. He's the best goalkeeper in the league. So, kind of unfair to place that sort of expectation on him. But I think the problem with them is that they've lost players that were really key to the way they played. So, if you look at the Mariners last season, for example, and they've got some different issues, but taking Max Ballard out of the Mariners and replacing him with Alfie McCalmont, like Alfie McCalmont might not be as good, but he can perform similar things to what Max Ballard, for example, does. Taking Oscar Zavada out of Wellington Phoenix and not replacing him with any player that's similar in any sort of way, and just kind of relying on Costa Barbarouses to, get involved and build up play, then make forward runs, then basically be in the box for every cross. Like it's just so much is being placed on him. Ishige's been okay. They've tried to kind of, relieve some of the burden on Costa through him, but now he's trying like Corbin Piper, who did score, and had a decent game, but they're trying a guy like Corbin Piper, who's really only played National League football in New Zealand, being thrown in, starting games now. Sam Sutton, they're trying to play a bit more advanced. I think he actually played through a virus yesterday as well, and that's why he had to come off at halftime. Someone like Luke Brooks-Smith, who's 16 years old, has started a few games recently, and they're relying on him a little bit. Like it just seems they also seem like a team that's kind of or a club that we just talked about Western United putting faith in their youngsters, but probably doing that because they felt like they had players that could contribute straight away and actually make an impact straight away. Wellington seemed like they've tried to do that, but maybe with players that needed kind of more of a bedding in period and aren't quite ready to replicate what we saw from the likes of Finn Sermon, Ben Old, Krajev, and these players that were so crucial to them last season. Cody, what's your read on Wellington at the moment?
I don't know if it's much different from yours, Christian. I think you look at the players they've lost. Zawada, as much as he was injured for a lot of last season, he's still a fantastic striker. Paulsen, we've already spoken about. Even Pennington, Ben Old, no, Ben Old was mentioned, Bozidar Krajev, Finn Sermon.
I mean, Pennington's actually been pretty decent for Perth, even though they've been, bad. So he's been a bit of a loss, yeah.
But you're talking about not even just that they're good players, but that kind of youth policy that Wellington's been implementing for the last few years, being the only professional New Zealand football club. They did have that responsibility to focus on actually developing New Zealand talent as well. But you had a few key players there that are success stories out of the academy, have now moved on, and now you're starting to see sorry, now you're starting to see the next wave kind of now you're starting to see the next wave kind of come through. There's going to be teething issues in that. Italiano, he's a sort of coach. He's very rigid in the way he's playing. He doesn't want to move away from that style. He has his vision of how football should be played, and his job is to implement it. When you hire a coach like that, you back him, you back the style, you back everything that he's trying to do. I don't think it'd be fair to say he's got to change something. I know you've mentioned maybe the style isn't working. I know you're not going to tell Chiefy to change things. I know you're a fan of what he can implement.
Well, I was actually going to pose this to Caden because Caden infamously asked Chiefy that question last year in the presser. I think it was that when they lost to Melbourne City about his style when he talked about Roberto De Zerbi. Now, like it's weird because if you everyone watches, you know, Roberto De Zerbi team, it's a lot more attacking than this. That's for sure. I think maybe some of the De Zerbi principles come out when Wellington play out from the goalkeeper. I think that's where it's kind of shown. And, you know, playing out and playing through pressure, they're actually not too bad at. It's just where they get into the midfield third and the attacking third. And Cody, sorry to cut you off, but I don't know whether that's a thing which Chiefy can change some things, maybe system-wise, to maybe help get some more numbers forward, or whether just because they're on a bad run, there's a confidence level there. Because there were so many like moments I felt against Adelaide where they would get out. Adelaide are a very good pressing team, probably one of the best in the comp. They actually were able to beat that press. Then Paolo Retre would get on the ball, and he was almost stopping on the ball or playing it sideways. And even honestly, even Rufa when he plays does this sometimes. And I feel like, you know, there you've got to be more, take that risk, go forward, release Ishige, release, you know, Costa a little bit earlier. Like I'm not sure if the handbrakes can come off a little bit. And Cody, you're right. Like I'm obviously a big fan of Chiefy's, and I will defend, you know, a lot of his kind of ideas. And I think he's, you know, I listened to the press conference after the game. I think he's realistic about where they're at. I think he knows kind of what we're just talking about there. I think he knows that some of these guys are a little bit underdone and they're not quite ready. And I think he's
What
willing
you said just
to,
there, Christian.
yeah.
Some of these guys are underdone. Maybe some of the profiles don't fit what he's trying to do. Is this a chief issue or is this a squad issue?
Well, he actually mentioned that he feels they're underdone, actually, like physically, as in he feels so. Someone like Corbin Piper, let's take an example, because he's played so long. I think a lot of people forget this, like, because he's played so long at a semi-professional level, like, his body isn't really conditioned for the demands of a professional environment yet. And I think that's kind of a point that he raised in the presser, which I hadn't actually heard him raise yet this season. And I wonder if Wellington, to the point about their style, I wonder if they'd be willing to press more if Chiefy had confidence in the actual player's ability physically to produce that. It's actually quite similar to David Zrilic not pressing at Perth because he knows that if we do this, the players are going to get tired too quickly and we're just going to get burnt every single time. We're going to lose like 6-0, you know?
You're talking about this being a bit of a transition period as well. This is kind of coming back to the point that I was originally making. It's not just that you've had good players leave, key players leave. You're talking about good academy products leaving. Now you're working on bringing the next lot through. It's going to take time for them to get used to the demands of professional football. You need to have that patience with them because the reality is when Paulson first came through, albeit he was a backup for Sale for a long time, when Sermon first came through, when Old first came through, they weren't straight away a fantastic
It's
football
true.
team.
It's true.
They took a long time to develop. There were still years where they were languishing around the bottom of the table. They're in that. They're basically reverting back to that phase now, if you know what I mean. Maybe not to that extent, but you know they're restarting the process again. They've got to have that patience with them as well. You've got a coach that has the potential to play good football. You see what he can do when Wellington Phoenix are at their best as a football club, when the academy products are hitting their peak before they're ready to take that step overseas. I think Wellington just need, and hopefully the higher ups do understand this. I'd be surprised if they didn't. You just got to understand the phase that you're in. You're in phase one. You stick with Chief. You stick with these academy players as they go through this period. Once you hit phase three or four of wherever it ends, you're going to be a good football team. That may take 1 to 2 years. It may take 3 to 5. But you've brought Italiano in to do a job. I think in this case, you do have to back him.
Well, for sure. No, I don't think anyone. I'd be shocked if there's any internal conversations around, hey, you
I
know,
would
do we
be
need a.
too, but just in case.
Yeah, but like that's the other thing too. And I know it's difficult because you're looking at some of their performances and you're going like, if I'm a Wellington fan, like Jesus Christ, there's kind of a little bit. There's not much to really get behind here. Like we've just registered. I mean, they lost to Melbourne City. They registered 0.03 XG. They had one shot on goal, none on target for the entire game. Now, like as a Wellington fan, if I'm watching that, I'm going like, okay, like where's this
That's
going?
what. That's where the patience has to
No,
kick
and
in,
that's
but.
right. And but the other point here is have some realism. Like Giancarlo Italiano, this is his first rough patch since he's been a head coach in the A-League. This is the first one. Like he's been basically faultless for, you know, a season and a bit, and now they've hit a rough patch. And to be fair, and this is where my opinions and my backing of him as a coach is definitely going to be tested because now we're going to see. you know, can he come out of this with a team that's better? I think he feels pretty confident in the fact that he can. But Caden, I guess, just to put a bow on this, like, does he need to tinker with anything system-wise or personnel-wise? Is there someone maybe not getting a go? Like, I know Phoenix fans, I think David Ball actually seems more likely that he's going to leave as opposed to actually playing games again for Wellington. But is there anyone else who maybe could be getting more of a run, or is there a system change maybe Chiefy could make?
I'm not sure about players that aren't getting run because they're actually quite thin depth-wise. Yeah. So I think their best available players are the ones that have been playing consistently. And as for system, I kind of asked him following that Melbourne City game. It was almost like a follow-up to that question I asked him about last year about his kind of belief and philosophy. And he said, obviously, like, he's still committed to that, but he's going to have to change some kind of minute details of it to try and get the results to improve. And I think that is the right course of action. He's got, obviously, like, going back to the whole Ruben Zadkovic thing, he differs from him. He's got a very clear identity of how he wants to play, and also how he wants his even full head to, like, how he wants his style of play to evolve over time. So I think he sees that this is a process, and he acknowledges that they've got a weaker squad than last season, but I think if he sticks to it, gives the season just some more time to develop some of those younger players and maybe try and get some new signings for next season, I think they're still on the right path, and I don't think Knicks fans should get too upset just yet.
I think I reckon they're probably going to add one or two players in January. I've just got that feeling with them too. So let's see what they do transfers wise as well. Okay, last thing I wanted to discuss. We are nearing the hour with the recording, so we're going to get through this one quickly. The handball rule in the A-League. Now, there's been Cody smiling. There's been three instances recently which I have been totally gobsmacked by. I don't really get it. And to be fair, I will preface this conversation. I haven't gone onto IFAB and looked at the specifics just yet with the kind of guidelines and what the deal is. But first one was a couple of weeks ago. So it was when Victory played Wanderers, 2-2 draw, Victory's equalizing penalty through Ryan Teague. That was about 8 days ago now. So Jack Clisby threw himself in front of a shot to block it, and the ball hit his arm from like 2 meters away, and that was adjudged to be a penalty. Okay. And Ryan Teague scored. That's fine. Midweek this week on Wednesday, Sydney FC, who were probably going to beat Perth Glory anyway, but they were 1-0 up at the time against Perth. Ball came across to Klamala, who has a shot at goal. Labib slid to block the shot. His arm was raised, hit his arm from, again, 2 meters away, and that was a penalty apparently, and that was converted, and that basically ended the game as a contest. And then yesterday, Melbourne City Brisbane was probably the most bizarre one, where I believe it was Harry Politidis, who was down the left-hand side, got to the byline, went to cross it in, crossed it in. Jack Hinger has slid to block the cross. His arm is behind him to break his fall. It's on the ground right next to him. The ball didn't actually hit his arm, but they reviewed it anyway, and they deemed that it wasn't a penalty because it didn't hit his arm, which means that if it did hit his arm, it would have been a penalty. But my whole point with all three of these is, if you go and have a look at them, I don't understand what any of the defenders could have done in either of the situations. And I agree to an extent around the criteria of making yourself bigger unnaturally. I think that is not the worst way to judge handball. My point is that it can't be deemed unnatural if you're sliding to block a shot or sliding to block a cross and your arm is away from your body. Because, Cody, you've played football, I've played football, many people listening, if you slide in to block a ball. If you slide in to make a tackle, your arm is going to go in the air. Like, there's no way to slide in. Like, there's actually no way to... I'm trying to, like, show you guys this on the... There's no way to slide with my arms behind my back. That actually makes no sense. If I was standing up, trying to block across, I can put my arms behind my back. That's fine. I remember, I think we were talking about this on our group chat a couple weeks ago. I mentioned Branislav Ivanovic, who I used to watch all the time for Chelsea. He was great at this. He used to actually, whenever he'd be in the box, and he'd keep his feet... And he put his arms behind his back always when a player would cross it in because, you know, just to show the referee basically like my arms are in an unnatural position. But if you're slide tackling, your arm is obviously going to go away from the body. So, yeah, I was just totally bemused by all three situations. And I don't really get it. I don't know if either of you two have kind of looked at these ones individually and have your own thoughts on it. But for me, it's dangerous because I think it can ruin games. Particularly if we get into like a semi-final and it's nil all and nothing's happening and then a decision like that where a player goes to block a shot, slides in and his arm's away from his body in like the 80th minute and you give that a penalty, like that can just ruin the game.
I think there's one point that I want to really make on this, and it's something that was brought up to you and we were talking about it on Wednesday, Christian, the Labib one. The ruling that they've implemented is that he has made, in the box, the position of his arm has made himself unnaturally bigger. It's hit his arm. That means it's a penalty. That ball's going towards goal. Technically, if that's how they've seen that incident, he should have been sent off. So if they've looked at that and gone, well, it's not deemed a red card, and they've probably gone, well, it's not deemed a red card because he's made his body unnaturally bigger because he's gone for a sliding challenge, and you need to do that to make a sliding challenge, is that they're not a natural position and it shouldn't be a penalty in the first place. That's where I think there's the words that I used to you in the chat, and I do apologize, I'm mumbling over my words, so I just want to make sure I'm saying this correctly, but the reality is if you're looking at that and going, yep, that's definitely a penalty, he's made his body unnaturally bigger, he's handled the ball, that's a handball, stand on business and send the guy off. That probably sounds incredibly harsh because I don't think Labib deserved to be sent off in that instance. But if you're there and you're going, okay, I'm going to implement this to the letter of the law, technically, that's what should have happened. So for me, the fact that they haven't gone that far says there's still even a hint of doubt in their mind, and it opens themselves up to criticism. Do they actually think it was a handball? Do they understand that, oh, yeah, he made his body unnaturally bigger because he was going in for a sliding challenge? And do they actually understand how the rule's meant to be implemented in that instance? And I don't think it's necessarily a knock on the... I don't actually remember off the top of my head who refereed that Sydney-Perth game. I do apologise.
I can't remember either, so you're all good.
And it's probably not even a knock on Australian referees in general. You'd ask a lot of referees around the world and they'd probably all come up with different opinions. Unfortunately, every referee sees the game differently, and it's because IFAB just changed the rules willy-nilly and don't really say anything about it. I'm on the IFAB website right now. It says everything about, oh, yeah, if the ball touches with this part of your hand or this part of your arm or this part of your shoulder, then it's the handball if your body's unnaturally bigger. Doesn't say anything about what happens when it's a sliding challenge where the natural position of your body is different. So I think it comes back to the fact that the game is changing at a rapid rate, and a lot of referees don't actually know the rules anymore. Simon Hill says it all the time. He can't keep up with the rules himself. I certainly can't keep up with the rules when I'm watching football. It's a mess. So I sympathize with referees because it is probably a difficult thing to implement. But the reality is you're paid to referee a football match. If you're going to be in that position, you're going to make decisions. Make them how they should be. If you think that's a handball, go the full length and send Labib off, because technically that's what should happen in that instance. If that's a handball and he's denied a goal-scoring opportunity, he should be sent off. For the record, I don't think it was a handball in the first place, so I'm not going to say he should have been sent off.
Yeah.
But that, for me, the fact that that's how that situation played out, that suggests to me that even there's still some doubt in the referee and VAR's mind. That's my whole point of saying that.
Yeah, like... So I think the Hingert one yesterday really bemused people, because I'm pretty sure IFAB, I think people were saying, like they said, if you're breaking your fall with your arm, it can't be handball. So that's why people are like, well, why are the, you know, referees here trying to implement that? But the Labib one, like, and even the Clisby one. So I always think with decisions, with referees, is if you're making a certain decision, then you're telling players that you're going to referee or you're going to officiate those situations like that, right? So like the Clisby one, I think basically like that was from point blank range that he blocked the ball. So if you're telling Clisby, hey, don't slide in to block the shot, in other words, you're telling him, hey, you can't do that. You have to let the shot go on goal and basically rely on your keeper to save it, which he probably wouldn't because they're 8 yards out. The Bibb one, same thing. Klamala had like a shot from basically 6 yards out. He's probably going to score or at least get it on target. So, you know, that's where I get really kind of annoyed and frustrated with this stuff is you've got to be really careful once you set a precedent with a certain situation and the decision that you make in that situation, then the players are going to think, okay, they're going to do this moving forward. Okay, now I need to be careful about when I slide in to block a shot or slide in to block a cross, you know? And like then there's other situations like today, Newcastle, MacArthur. I thought Valerjamar should have been sent off today because he's on a yellow card, which he already got for getting in Sean Evans' face. He scored and then he went in Sean Evans' face to celebrate. That's a second yellow. He should be off. And by not giving him a second yellow in that situation, you're condoning his behavior and telling other players, hey, you can come up and get in my face if you score a goal. That's fine. I won't give you a booking. And that's where, yeah, I just get pretty frustrated with this stuff. So, Caden, we haven't gone to you yet on this. Did you see either of these situations? Any thoughts on them?
Yeah, look, I think just in general with the handball rule, it's almost like we're getting to a point where you just have to say, no matter the context, no matter if you're sliding or breaking your fall or in the middle of the midfield or in the box, you just have to say, no matter what context, if it hits your arm, it's a handball. I feel like that's like the only way that it can be consistently officiated. Like, we're always, because if we keep going how we're going, we're just going to continually keep having these discussions whether this was a handball or not. And it's not just the A-League, it's happening every league around the world. So it's almost, yeah, I don't know what you guys think, but it's just like, if it hits your hand, no matter the context, handball. I think that's the only way we can end these discussions around the handball rule.
However it's implemented, I don't have a strong opinion either way. But the fact is, we're spending 5-10 minutes debating a rule that really should be black and white. That's probably the most frustrating thing about all this.
Is it not grey, though, in a lot of instances? Because, so like,
Caden, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah, so I think you, Cody, you mentioned some stuff there on the IFAB website. So the unnatural sort of making yourself bigger, I think that should still be something that's followed, but I think there should be exceptions for basically sliding into block shots, sliding into block crosses.
You can still do that in a way of, okay, if a referee is able to internally go into the head, has it made contact with their with the relevant position on their arm? Yes, no, not a handball. We don't worry about it. Yes. Was it in this situation? Yes, no. If it's yes, then you go down this way. No, then you go down this way. Either way, you'll end up in a black and white solution. Yeah. There's obviously contextual things that are going to come up, but it's not like you're going to have a game where a very unique situation that's never happened before occurs. I can guarantee you everything that's happened on a football pitch, that can happen on a football pitch in terms of handball, has already happened already, and there should be an answer to what you do in that situation. It's like being a lawyer. Everything's happened before. Reference the old case with the case number and the fancy brackets that they need to do, because if you do the wrong bracket, apparently it's the wrong case. That's a dig at my enterprise law studies. That subject fucking sucked. But there's something you can refer to, and there's something that you can base a decision off. It as much as there's going to be contextual things that you need to consider, it can be black and white.
Well, I wonder if, so last thing on this was, so the Labib decision came after the Clisby one. So what if we use more, like referees use precedent essentially more in their decisions? So if it came out after the game, if they were asked about, hey, why was that Labib penalty given? We don't understand. Basically the things that I was talking about, I don't understand that. And you could go, hey, well, we just gave a decision on the weekend for Jack Clisby doing a very similar thing. So we're deciding to keep it consistent, set a precedent. We followed that there. So we're going to follow the same thing in that scenario with Labib. That's why we gave a penalty. I think although people would still be like, you're not going to please everyone. Like, that's the other thing about all we're discussing here, is that people are going to be, you know, have their opinions no matter what, and people are going to disagree with whatever referees do. There's no getting away from that. But I think if in football we followed essentially more of a precedent-based reasoning for why decisions are made, I think probably a lot of people would get around that a bit more. Because a lot of people do like consistency, right? You know, that's kind of something which is pretty popular amongst football fans, at the absolute least. So, yeah, let's see what happens. I'd be like, what, Perth are playing Wanderers on Tuesday night. It's probably going to be some like ridiculous handball decision. And I don't know. I'll be back here next week getting shitty about it. I'll try not to. I hate talking about referees. So, yeah. I very rarely do that. So, just thought there was some instances. Wasn't having it. All right. We're going to wrap up the pod. A few other things I wanted to mention. We talked about Wellington, but Adelaide United, 6 straight away wins. I'm not too sure if that's the first time in club history that that's been done, but yeah, doing well, Adelaide United. I know, you know, I've still got some reservations about them, but they've definitely exceeded expectations so far. Melbourne City exceeding expectations given their injury crisis, continuing to get results. I thought, you know, like I mentioned before, they were really tiring against Brisbane, but they still found a way to get the result. Seb Mizeo, really, really in some rich rain of form at the moment too. Sydney FC, after not the best start to the season, slowly sort of finding their feet. A couple of wins, home wins this week. So Adrian Segicic, awesome hat trick as well. Well done to him. And Perth Glory, not going to lie, for the last sort of 10, 15 minutes of that game, I think I was a Perth Glory supporter, because it was kind of awesome seeing them in the situation that they're in, fighting the way they did to hold on to that 1-0 win against Auckland. And, you know, Cody, I think you're right what you said before about they've definitely identified that they didn't get it right in the offseason. They've tried to rectify it quickly. And I think Zrilic just kind of found a starting 11 that he likes at the moment. I think they'll add a couple of pieces in January. I'm expecting them to be a lot better second half of the season. Caden, I'll start with you. Out of the things I mentioned there, anything which caught your eye?
Yeah, just as I'm a Melbourne base, I guess I'll talk about Melbourne City. Yeah, they just really good performances from a bunch of young academy prospects. Ben Mazzeo scored again. Harry Polatibi's doing well. So, and we had Emin Djurakovic made his debut.
Djurakovic,
yeah, made his debut. He's another one to watch. And then, yeah, so an exciting time for Aurelio Vidmar. And I think I wrote about this a few weeks ago, but I think he deserves a lot of credit for turning around this season with those young players under his leadership, because he was facing a lot of criticism when he got offered that contract from...
I think there's a lot of City fans deleting some old tweets at the moment. Yeah,
exactly. So I think credit where credit's due, is doing well. So, yeah.
Cody, Adelaide United, 6 straight away wins. You'd be interested in that. But also Sydney FC, Adrian Segicic, not bad.
Segicic is someone I was actually talking about on kickoff with Michael Thompson this morning. He's someone I was really hoping would be a proper starting player for Sydney SC this season. Maybe not unfortunately, but Sydney SC ended up with a stacked front line, and that meant his opportunities were a little bit limited. Douglas Costa is out at the moment. I really hope he's got the opportunity to start on a consistent basis. I think he genuinely could be one of the best young talents in the league at the moment if he gets a platform where he can show his best football. I think some people are going to be very, very impressed with what not just he can do here, but what he could end up being in the future as well. The guy's a fantastic player. Very versatile, can play a number of different roles. I'm keen to see what he can do in this period.
All right. Awesome. Like I mentioned before, we've got like the top 8 in the A-League at the moment is extremely tight. It seems like a couple of teams are going to be pretty disappointed at the end of the season, the way things are going. We're going to have a pretty competitive top 6. So we're back for the new year. We're going to be hopefully, being pretty consistent with this every week, back with the podcast. And we're clocking in at the moment at an hour 15. So well done, guys. We've been able to cut back a little bit by 15 minutes from the norm. That's excellent. So good start already to the new year. Well done to you two. Nothing to add? No.
Thanks.
I was going to say, I'm in the middle of trying to search up what the record for the most away wins was. I think Melbourne Victory went 8 away wins in a row at one stage.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if there's anything more.
Okay. So yeah, let's keep an eye on LA United there. Caden, any closing remarks?
Don't know.
Brief was
Yeah,
all good for you tonight.
yeah, it was good. I guess I'll just throw back to my prediction where I said Jeju Sokaru last time I was on the pod, but I think that's coming true. So yeah, just a bit of credit for myself there, I think.
All right. Hashtag vindication. Hashtag Drew for the Ruse. So yeah.
Get it trending.
Get it trending. Like hashtag free Jake Najowski, getting that trending as well. Cody.
So from what I can see, Melbourne Victory and Sydney FC have both gone 8 away wins in a row.
You're really obsessed with this away win thing.
Mariners and Wanderers both had 7 each. So Adelaide are only 2 away wins away from getting into that conversation as well. So yeah, that probably speaks to the achievement as well.
So Carl Viet might hold the record for most away wins by an A-League coach consecutively.
Unless
Okay.
I've read the stuff in front of me incredibly wrong, I really hope I haven't. But maybe
No,
I should put a disclaimer that I may be a little bit stupid sometimes.
look, that your words, mate. Your words, mate, not mine. So yeah. All right. But no, it's no, you gotta give Adelaide credit. They've been excellent away from home so far this season. All right, guys. Good stuff, good stuff. It's only 8:15 where I am, so that's excellent. It's not even 9 o'clock where you guys are, so this is well done. This is well done by us. A really efficient pod. This is how we need to do it moving forward. Good stuff. All right. That's going to do. First episode of 2025 in the books. We'll be back next Sunday night for another pod. Until next time, it's bye for now.